Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
Back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Wednesday night, June 29th. My name is Jake Luke, and I am joined on my screen by Benjamin Franklin on this Independence Day episode. How's it going?
Doing very well. It's been a grind, as I'm sure many listeners are, you know, in between. Like we were just talking off air, where you're in the summer hours. Fridays are easy, but Monday through Thursday, some people are on vacation. You're on vacation. You're filling in for someone. Someone's filling in for you. You got stuff you got to try to knock out. Got big plans on the weekends, trying to make every week of those 8, 9, 10 weeks the most of it. So it is summer season and just grinding and then hanging out, getting a little tan and the good stuff, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade it. You know, I love me some fall, love me some football. You know, plenty of good times throughout the year. But summer, it's still light out, and we are approaching 9 o'clock here in the greater Baltimore area. So it's I like that about it. We were talking a little bit about how a lot of work on our plates, a lot of vacation on our plates, a lot of different things going on. But it's just a good feeling, and it's also a good feeling to sit down and talk some Ravens with you, bud. It's been a little while since we really had the opportunity. We were planning to last week, and then, you know, arguably the saddest day in franchise history with the death of a current and former player. So we obviously sort of went a little bit off script to kind of talk about that for a full episode. And that was maybe off the heels of minicamp. I think we talked about that a little bit as well. But yeah, it's probably been, you know, a couple weeks since we've done an episode proper, really breaking things down. So I think we're planning to do that tonight. But how's everything else going? How you feeling about the team? How you feeling about yourself? I love the hat. Everything's looking good.
Yeah, it's one of the few Ravens hats that fits my gigantic head and poofy hair. So there's definitely an added plus. I definitely hit some. We got Ramey here. What's up, Ramey? Definitely got some tight boys on my skull from time to time. I have to give up on, give them away to a friend, things like that. But yeah, man, I feel like removed from the offseason a little bit, removed from free agency, removed from the draft, I feel like this is the time of the year where it's easy to start feeling better about the team. Things have started to, you know, aside from the tragic incidents that happened last week, things have gotten pretty quiet for the most part. Really, the only kind of continuous story, I guess, is just there's no news on it. The Ravens and Lamar Jackson in conversation. So other than that, it feels like, you know, things are going along okay. We'll see what players come back from injury and when they do. Camp coming out here in, you know, less than a month. The Ravens have moved their practices to the mid-afternoon like absolute lunatics for whatever sadomasochist reason. That just a good time in that August Owings Mills jungle at the Under Armour Performance
Center.
Dude,
that's legitimately, I don't know what's going on there, but I feel like that's a bad decision. Like, and I live on the same road as a facility. I know how, and I mean, that's not just that area, obviously, it's the entire area. Everyone knows how humid it gets around here. Like,
yeah, even especially there in that jungle of trees, yeah. It feels like the air is super, I mean, I'm from the woods. I grew up, it gets palatable. You can taste the air. And usually by the end of practice, which over the course of, I think, really my entire freaking lifetime, the Ravens have been wrapping up by noon most of the time for training camp. So they're really going to push themselves, really going to sweat it out. I don't know that it does anything else but make you a little more miserable. I'm not sure. I would love to hear. I'm sure we will hear why practice are moved. I'm sure that Jameson Hensley will say, Coach Harbaugh, I've got to ask. Why the champ, blah, blah, blah. John will be like, well, there's just some things we had to get done in the morning, whatever. I'm sure there's some weird little reason.
Just, but you know, some great opportunities, some great great football men out here that are going to be enjoying their time. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be really great.
Maybe it's even just like, hey, we got really bad injuries last training camp in the mornings. So we're switching to the afternoon. Maybe it's a little Ted Lasso or something.
I got a workshop on John. That was a little tough. I've had many.
I feel like he's not an easy person to mimic at all.
His brother, not in the way that his brother is. His brother, the thing that's very easy to do about his brother is he's very Kramer-esque. He's, you know, very physical kind of actor. He's moving around a lot. The limbs are flailing everywhere. The face, there's just a lot going on there. John,
even just in the voice itself also crescendos and it moves.
Yeah.
It scales.
It does move a lot. But yeah, you know, John Harbaugh impersonation, I'll continue to work on it. But yeah, that is kind of a weird decision. I don't know what's going on there. Great tweet by Jonas referencing Swamp Ass, things of that nature. So excited to see how that's going to play out. And maybe it is like an injuries thing. Maybe it's something like that where it's like, hey, we're going to like take the morning to get our bodies activated a little bit and like maybe try to avoid some of this preventable stuff that really, really kind of derailed things last year. So I hadn't even thought of that until you brought it up. Maybe that is a part of it.
I'm sure there is a reason. I just don't know the validity of that reason. But yeah, I feel like tying it back, you know, it feels like it's going to be a formidable defense, I think, to a degree. We'll see. Mikey McDonald, I think, again, I think I've referenced it a couple times, but, you know, we can make a lot of assumptions about what he is or isn't based off of what he did in college. I'm sure there will be many things you can draw, but at the same time, it's a different field. The hashes are wider. You had a different, you're playing against, you know, if you're Michigan, I mean, you're playing at a significant talent advantage 80% of the time, 90% of the time, where it is truly a big deal. It's a different ball game in the NFL. So, and one thing that I have heard that I kind of suppressed for a while, I was told not to say, and I won't say who said it, but they said, you know, Mike McDonald was the one installing the packages, the blitz packages and the pressure packages in 2019 and I think 2020 for Wink. So he was the one that was his assignment, was to get the pressures in every week. So he's got that in the bag. Hopefully he's just a little bit more multiple. And it sounds like the big takeaway from the culmination of, you know, Rich Eisen show and Dan Patrick show and Marlon Humphrey doing some interviews and, you know, Patrick Queen talking here and there, that really the thing that McDonald wants to do philosophically is educate each member of the defense on the entirety of the call, the reason for the call, and why the call is being made, and why a check is made, and understanding what everyone's doing. And I think that can definitely be a huge boost for sure, but I also just find the devil's advocate of it interesting. There was a story I'm going to blank on. I might be able to look it up. I'll try to give credit to the coach that said it, but basically said Dante Jackson, the corner who's on the Panthers now and was at LSU, Miles Boykin Mostyn back in the day, I believe, at LSU, but he said he was the most talented, smartest player. He said, I've never seen a player spend as much time in the film room, especially in college. I think it was one of his college coaches on Aranda's staff or whatever it was, would say, wow, he would bring me things as like a sophomore, tendencies, you know, percentages of things in different situations. And in certain coverages, he would get caught thinking and processing, and he would get flat-footed and someone would just run a simple route right behind him and score a touchdown. So, you know, I think there can be a little bit of a blade to that, but I'm curious to see how that plays out. Sounds like the players like it. I think it would definitely help guys that have been in Wink's defense for a few years, Chuck Clark, Marlon Humphrey, you know, Calais Camp, you know, whoever has been there for a couple of years. That does have that mastery of my assignment and being numb or blank to the rest of it a little bit. So very curious to see how that all plays out. Feels like they're just going to be even more multiple, a little more unpredictable, a little less sending 5+ man rushers, all those things. But definitely starting to get really excited about this defense, long story short. The talent, I think the identity of the franchise being what it is and the way that you hear even a guy like Kyle Hamilton, still the reverence that the Baltimore Ravens have with defensive football and how pathetic they were last year, really unprecedented in their franchise. The deep plays they allowed were pathetic. And I think any of them would agree. And so getting back to that, reinvigorating that sense of pride defensively and limiting big plays and more importantly, forcing turnovers, just very excited. I think this defense can have a couple finishing touches added to it personnel-wise that wouldn't cost that much. We'll see. I'm sure there's going to be some moves made, some guys that come through, maybe a UDFA or two that shine, all those fun little training camp stories. But I think that's the part that's getting me excited.
Yeah, I think the you make a lot of good points there. I think the big play felt inevitable at times last year, which is really, really not what you want. And you know, obviously that's a little bit anecdotal, but there's definitely something to that. And there's definitely something to the idea. And I think you were talking about this on Twitter a little bit. When you have a tendency to like blitz and send in all your chips to the middle of the table and fourth down in situations like that, then teams aren't really going to be afraid to kind of throw deep and like test you a little bit in those clutch situations. And I think that got them several times in the Chicago game, for example. They ended up winning, obviously, by hook and by crook on the offensive side of the ball after they gave up that big play. But it just didn't happen too many times. And you mentioned the idea of don't hesitate. I think a way to avoid hesitation as a intermediate and sort of lower level defender is having great safety play behind you. So I think that was a big reason why they went out and they invested in the safety position in the way they did with Williams, with Hamilton, and some of these guys. And Chuck Clark's still a part of this team. So we'll see what happens there. Sounds like Chuck Clark actually just had a child. So congratulations to him. I wonder if he's
9 pound, 9 ounce baby girl. That's bigger than I was when I was born. That's a unit coming out of the womb.
That is a unit. I wonder if that child is going to grow up to be an excellent, excellent podcaster, but we'll certainly see about that. I'm kind of warming up to the idea of just why not keep him around? Like, unless you can swing a trade for like a solid wide receiver that would really help you. And he could maybe potentially be a part of that. I think a team might be smart for making that move if they have a real need at safety and a real need for a communicator at safety and somebody who's going to get guys lined up. But I don't know. I just feel like it might be similar to the way they value offense. He might be more valuable to them than he is for like other teams. And it might just be worth saying like, hey, we're going to hang on to this guy. And even when, you know, there's not going to be whatever sub package where he's going to be coming in, like it's worth just having him around in case he does need to get in there, because we've seen how quickly secondary play can get off the rails when injuries start to hit you a little bit. And with the fact that you're going to be starting a rookie at ostensibly Chuck Clark's position. So yeah, a lot of things to consider on that back end, but it is very exciting.
Definitely. And I think you made a great point. His value is in his wealth of knowledge of his teammates and of the, you know, his experience in this organization. But if you send him somewhere else and he's starting fresh, and he is starting fresh this year in a sense with McDonald's. So I think he certainly is more valuable to the Ravens than he would be most other places. Unless it's the Giants, that would make a ton of sense. And, you know, that's why we've always toyed with the idea of him for Darius Slayton, things like that. So and that's the other thing. Now that the picture is pretty clear, I don't know that we're going to see a drastic move on the offensive side of the ball. I would say that would be more of a surprise than not. So now with yet another wide receiver, Terry McLaurin, getting another huge contract, the Ravens have just, you know, the brief conversation of roster construction and things like that, they have tried their very best to match talent for talent, secondary to receivers. They have paid for it. They have drafted it. They have different body types. They have different skill sets. All of those things, I think, make sense with keeping a Clark and those things. But on the other side of the ball, they haven't. They traded away assets. They've, you know, spent draft capital, but traded away talent and neglected to make super heavy pushes on it. So it's just the year. And I think, you know, at this point, we're a little bit more towards the calm part. Like I said, it's easy to get excited, but again, now it's the urgency is starting to build the closer you get to training camp that this is maybe the year where they hit it out of the park or they completely flip as a franchise. And Harbaugh, who has been here for a very, very long time, you know, if they don't do well, maybe they part ways. If Lamar Jackson doesn't get what he wants, doesn't, you know, they don't have a great year, maybe elsewhere, all of those things. So I think that everything is on the table in terms of outcomes, in terms of continuity heading into next year after a successful season versus a huge shakeup next year possible as well. So I think that's a really interesting place to be considering where we thought they would be maybe a couple years ago or last year, even at this time, and where they haven't been very much. You know, they did have Joe Flacco and then drafted Lamar Jackson. They did have that flow, Ozzie Newsome into Eric DaCosta. There hasn't really been a lot of quick pace changes. That's not their thing. It's not Steve Bisciotti's thing. He went on Studio 44 with Marlon Humphrey, and you can just tell the kind of guy that he's always been. And any fan who has been lucky enough to maybe go to the facility and get some kind of private tours or have any time with him or any of those interactions, I think it just kind of gives a nice, from the fan perspective, it gives a nice blanket of serenity knowing that they are so calculated, they don't panic, and it all starts at the top with him. And I think that was a really fun interview for that reason. And their self-awareness of it is not performative, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. And I think, weirdly enough, like that is kind of a very divisive point for a lot of fans right now, for guys like Voss who want to see the all-in kind of push and things like that. And they say that, oh, it works for the Rams, it works for other teams. And that's certainly true, but it's just, it feels like the Ravens kind of are what they are. And this offseason was sort of an encapsulation of that. And, you know, they obviously go out and they do make a big splash to sign Williams, but it's at a position they have historically valued more than other teams, going all the way back to Ed Reed and some of these other players that they've invested heavily in at safety. And yeah, I think it all does go back to Bisciotti. You know, Voss talks about how it goes back to Harbaugh, and that's certainly true, but I see Harbaugh as an extension of Bisciotti at this point. I see DaCosta as that a little bit as well. DaCosta maybe a little bit more of a maverick in his own right, but yeah, Bisciotti's just very, he's a normal guy. He built a business in kind of a ground up way, in as much a way as a billionaire probably can. People who aren't too familiar with him, I think, should read Next Man Up, which was John Feinstein's book about the 2004 season. And surreptitiously, that was like right around the time that Bisciotti became the majority owner of the team after Art Modell sold him his majority stake as he was sort of nearing the end of his life. And then, you know, Bisciotti came in there and he allowed John to come in and spend a year with the franchise. And you get a lot of good info and insight on him and his life growing up and building AeroTech and then coming in and having some, I wouldn't say like disagreements or anything like that with Billick, but, you know, challenging Billick in a way that Art Modell really never did. And it was maybe a little uncomfortable.
Being the boss.
Yeah, exactly. He was willing to be the boss, but he's also like, he's very much like, I'm going to prop people up. I'm going to promote people. I'm going to put them in positions of opportunity to go and
hire internally.
Hire internally and tell people like, hey, like when you're making this critical decision, like when they hired Harbaugh, for example, he's like, I forget exactly where I found it or why I came across it, but he was talking to Sandusky, I think, literally like right after they had hired Harbaugh. He was like smoking a cigar in the interview. And he was like, when I make big decisions like that, I tell my guys, like, I'm going to leave the room and you guys are going to talk about this and you're going to come to your own conclusions about it, because I don't want you to only think about it in the prism of me sitting here and you kind of like saying what I want to hear necessarily. So he's always got that, you know, he started a recruiting company, so he's got this sort of eye for, I think, talent in not only sports, but in business and things, you know, things of that nature. So it's a very interesting dynamic. It feels sort of like a mom and pop shop, but not in a bad way, that, you know, people, and obviously, you know, I don't want to rag on the Bengals after the year they had, but people refer to the Bengals as like a mom and pop shop and kind of a derogatory term. Feels like the Ravens are maybe the better side of the coin of that, being a small market team. They obviously invest a ton of money.
He's relative to the rest of the NFL in terms of the grand, how, you know, his assets and what his net worth is, but one of the more wealthy owners in the NFL. He's not on the bottom half of that. He's consistently going to be top 10. So, you know, the Browns are a football family. He is a billionaire.
Yeah, and if you've seen his boat down at Sunset, you know he's not hurting for any cash or anything like that. So the cash over cap conversation, even maybe that's a little exaggerated by us at times, but yeah, just it feels like we have, I guess all of this is to say, it feels like we have settled into the dog days of summer. Points have been made. The bullets have flown. Yet again, nobody's won this war, you know, between the two warring factions of this fan base, or even more than two probably. And we're just approaching a training camp that I think I'm very excited for, very, very excited for, because of all the things that we've mentioned. And it just feels like the cupboard is stocked at a lot of different positions, and I'm excited to see them, some of which are tight end and running back. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's kick the tires on the running backs. I want to tease myself into the tight ends. I want to edge myself into the tight ends.
Tee me off on the RBs. I got to pull them up.
So we've got Mr. J. Kalen Dobbins. We've got Gustavo Edwards. We have Justice Hill, Mike Davis, Tyler Beatty, Nate McCrary, and there's a couple other bodies aside from that that are camp bodies and some longer shots that are escaping my mind. Those are the, I guess, you know, the only ones I really have anything to say about in the end, ultimately. So, you know, very, again, would say that this is, I guess, a deep room, but also an uncertain room in the sense, looking at it as a whole, three guys coming off major injury, a veteran who will be his first year in the system, as well as a rookie that could be really fun and could end up with very little opportunity or a lot of opportunity, especially early in the season. So there is a general sense from what I have heard, J.K. Dobbins is very far along in his rehab and recovery and should be good to go for the start of the season, should be a participant of camp to a degree, somewhat expectedly, not maybe the start, but within the first week or two, whereas Gus Edwards is not quite as far along and might be a guy that doesn't, you know, starts on IR or PUP to start the year. So those two are obviously the ones that drive the train, drive the room. So successful. Maybe talking about Gus Edwards, one of the, I think, really the most underrated players in the NFL over his first, you know, 2-3 years in the league. Someone that consistently averaged 5 yards a carry nonstop, got better every season, I would say, got more complete, went from really just being that somewhat similar to like a better version of Latavius Murray. I called Latavius Murray the zombie shark because he's just a mindless runner who hits his hole. Gus Edwards was that with a lot more talent and just younger, better. You know, Latavius Murray was good, whatever. We don't have to talk about Latavius Murray, but Gus Edwards getting leaner, getting more explosive, becoming a better pass catcher, becoming more reliable in the pass game in general as a pass protector, maintaining his status as, I think, really unanimous top two short yardage backs in the NFL, him and Ezekiel Elliott in terms of...
Nate Tice, let me stop, not stop ahead. You, but just interrupt you real quick. But yeah, Nate Tice tweeted this stat the other day. In 2020, Gus Edwards had 22 rushes in short yardage situations, third, fourth down, and 1-2 to go. He picked up a first down on 21 of those carries, which is a 95.5 success rate. You mentioned Zeke Elliott. He said there have been 10 other RBs since 2019 that have a season with 20-plus rushes in short yardage situations. The next highest success rate is Ezekiel Elliott in 2019 at 78.3. So that's like over a 20% delta.
Right. And him over his career from 2018 through 2020, it was, I think, like an 89.8% conversion rate in what that is called by Football Outsiders and I think has become kind of the media term power situations, third or fourth and two or shorter. It's been consistently 90%, and the closest has been Zeke consistently around 80 to 81%. So the best that there is, definitely. And it's ironic because I think a lot of people would be quick to maybe say, oh, well, Lamar Jackson, he does that. That's why, you know, whatever. Lamar Jackson sucks at sneaking the ball badly, very bad. One of the worst. Like, he's not Phillip Rivers bad, but he's fucking horrible. The worst thing Lamar Jackson does is quarterback sneaks. I think that can be unanimous.
It looks like when he tries to do it, it looks like some kind of weird like glitch in Madden where the game
it's a cartoon.
Doesn't
it's
like, want you to like succeed. So it's like, yeah, fuck you. You're not going to convert this.
What I imagine in my twisted brain is that like it's some sort of cartoon or like Netflix series like All American, and like he took C4 before the game in JV year of high school, and there's a quarterback sneak and he just starts running around really quickly and, you know, darting around and does too much, and they're like, Lamar, you just got to chill out. Like, he just, it reminds me of a fox that gets trapped in like animal control is trying to get him, and the fox is just instead of just like push. The one thing Lamar Jackson truly sucks at, I think, or is even bad at, is quarterback sneak. So Gus has been a saving grace in that sense. And I think JK can be good in that, but just there's nobody better than him. So that's what is missed. I think that certainty and that kind of badassery. Lamar can, of course, you know, they do the QB powers and stuff, and those have had some decent success. But I think that's the thing that I miss most about Gus, other than just kind of some sick cunt runs. To quote the Aussie boys, you know, absolute sickies coming through, breaking stuff out.
What?
Daniel Ricciardo?
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay. But, you know, some sickies, man. He started busting those zone cutback lanes and stuff like that. So, Gus, I don't know. Seems like could maybe not be as good again. Could maybe take longer to recover. Could have a more severe rehab injury situation. JK, I think, is supposed to be back. he has already dealt with this before. I think that's why he was so frustrated that it happened in a preseason game, especially. And his comments last year, or likes that he did of other tweets and things like that. So don't expect to ever see him take another snap in a preseason game, rightfully so. But
maybe he should go all in on the Daniel Ricciardo shtick and just talk about how good looking he is all the time and wear party shirts everywhere.
Just like not actually be that good looking, but like kind of, I guess.
Danny Rick's kind of hot, but you know, let's calm down.
If he just worked at a SaaS company, he would just be like the most average guy.
It's kind of tough though, because like you can't look like he does and then like talk about it like as if it's like some kind of joke. Like that's, you can't be self deprecating like that when, you know, it's just there's a little bit of a dissonance there. We got to work through that if we're Danny Rick.
We do. Look, you're not Carlos Sainz, okay? You're not the most handsome, best driver in F1. You're just not. But anyway, JK, man, I don't know. Last year was supposed to be him being a real pass threat, a real receiving threat. That was the big hype. I think that tends to happen to running backs in the offseason. There tends to be like, Dalvin Cook is going to be the next Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is going to be the next Marshall Faulk, but 40 times better. And this, you know,
it's always contextualized.
Thing that we always start fabricating.
It's always, it's always contextualized around fantasy too. Whoever has the best fantasy offseason, it's going to be the next big guy, is going to be that next guy. Like it's, oh, this guy, next Adrian Peterson. This guy, you know, next Marshawn. Like it's like, come on, guys.
Who's the next Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah. And listen, Jonathan Taylor Jonathan Taylor sort of came out of nowhere a little bit. So maybe he was not looked at as the next of anything. But, you know, it's an interesting dynamic, those running backs and their tie.
It's just, I think it's a secret thing among like national beat writers. They're like, all right, if there's a back that like has been working on the pass game, I'm just going to like use that for like 5 articles and like 3 interviews that I do on TV. Like that's going to be the thing. Like,
it's also kind of a safe bet because you can kind of more easily predict like running back production than like the people that say like, oh, this dude's going to be the next Justin Jefferson, like that. You're really kind of putting your nads on the table there.
Definitely. Those are few, far and more between, but, JK, ran a lot of routes. I've talked about him ad nauseum on this podcast, ran a lot of routes at Ohio State, was split out wide a lot at Ohio State. Was a good pass catcher at Ohio State, showed a few flashes, had a couple struggles as, you know, a rookie. And I think we were all expecting him to be 1,500 yards, 10 plus touchdowns, if not more last year. So if, I think he's a pretty good bet on a back to recover from ACL and be successful still, which usually there's a tough drop off after that the first year. But I don't know. I like it. I think he's going to be a real factor this year again. It stinks. We didn't get to see him all rocked up last year off of a fresh full off season of, you know, stiff arming his coaches into the pads, into this earth and doing all that cool stuff. But sometimes that stuff's just more for show a little bit more, you know, the training is fun, all of it. But at the end of the day, I think that having him back in this offense, as opposed to a Devontae Freeman, who was surprisingly kind of like, all right, but really not like a threat to take it to the house, not a threat to reel off consistently explosive gains, things like that. And Murray and those guys just opens things up in general. And there was definitely a drop off last year that it feels like does add a little extra pressure, especially on Lamar Jackson, especially on the pass game in turn, all of those things. And in turn, you know, pass protection, everything. So I think if one of those two guys comes back to form, they're in a very good spot. But other than that, they have Mike Davis, which for a veteran minimum, when he was signed, it was a big freak out. It was just vet minimum, not guaranteed. I think it's like 100 grand or 200 grand they'll lose if they cut him. But a nice veteran that I think is more still with it than a Murray or a Freeman in terms of being kind of balanced still, a good pass protector, capable enough as a pass catcher, a little bit of wiggle, a little more ability to break tackles, make guys miss, just a hair. Maybe, you know, not a home run threat, but a little bit of an improvement, I would say, to those two guys over them individually. So I think that was a nice move. And then Justice Hill, also coming off of a tough injury, is going to be fighting for that final spot probably with Beatty. And I think maybe we do see Gus on the pup list, especially if he's not ready, because you can kind of keep 3, keep 4 instead in turn. But Beatty versus Hill is kind of the thing to watch. And it just feels like while the Ravens did part ways with 2 draft picks last year, that's not their MO. But Beatty, a guy that, you know, ran between the tackles, ran outside the tackles, has a low center of gravity, has maybe a little more sand in his pants and capability as a runner in power or zone situations than a Hill. While I do think Hill did some nice things when the Ravens needed him to, especially in 2020, especially that COVID matinee game against the Steelers. But you know, he's a smaller guy. Hill's not, you know, a big guy either. So I think that's a fun one. Beatty is a real threat as a pass catcher. We know that. We've seen that. We saw that in Mobile. He's very comfortable in it. So I'm excited to see what he can do in camp. And I expect him to be a little bit of a shining star in camp in ways.
Yeah, it feels like you got power coming in there with Davis and just a veteran presence. And he might well make the team. It wouldn't surprise me at all, especially if you mentioned if that pup list comes into play. But yeah, Justice Hill and Beatty, I like them both, and I don't think they're both going to make the team. I think I'd probably lean towards Beatty at this point, but I like them both as sort of that JK facsimile. And I don't know why I keep thinking of this as if it was like some really prominent part of their offense, but like I feel like they did a lot of like orbit stuff in 2020 with JK, where it was like he would either take the ball in an orbit as like a screen or like a handoff, or he just like run behind and then they would do like the option, the V or counter bash type thing with Gus. And like that feels like a really big, if nothing else, attention grabber. And like if you can incorporate that with JK coming back and he's, you know, that guy for you that is going to come back from the injury, I feel like you can maybe get these guys on the field at the same time. And JK can draw some of that attention on an orbit or whatever sort of decoy thing. And then spring those guys for some yardage. And you got yourself some serious, you know, fresh legs, my favorite thing in the world, and some juice and a guy like Beatty. So, yeah, very excited about this group, to be honest.
Very excited. I'm curious, first and foremost, of the injuries, excited as well. And I just love, as a fan, I love J.K. Dobbins' anger that he's always played with. And I think that there is like more hatred in his soul and tar in his spirit. And I want to see that piss, salt, and vinegar.
The Sendejo beef, which I don't know where that came from, but he just like, you know, kind of B-slapped him.
Knew Sendejo was a fugaz.
It seems that way. It seems like a lot of guys kind of talk about him like that. So maybe JK just sort of put him on front street in that Browns game. And that was fun to see. You really don't see that in a lot of modern players, I don't think. And people say that the Ravens kind of lack teeth. I just think that's like a generational thing with guys coming up these days. But
the rules have changed, so whatever. They're not supposed to do certain things. But yeah
it's okay. I'm not saying it's like a bad thing or anything, but it is cool to see guys who, you know, have that dog in them. And I think J.K. Dobbins.
He has that dog. The Jermaine Pratt busting a stiff arm on him, taking it to the house after Jermaine Pratt was talking. It feels like he is so talented and has so much vinegar in his soul that he can target players on a field and expose them. And that is the definition. Has that dog in him. He is the dog.
Exactly.
When people say I have that dog in them, that means I have some J.K. Dobbins to me. Because he is
the devil inside him has been tossing and turning for this past year.
He's just been ignoring Marlon Humphrey. Love that.
That's good. And staying
back. That's on it, good.
Yeah. That is, listen, we don't need, did you see that Kyle Hamilton tweet today? Because I think he's been spending a little too much time around our guy Marlon lately. So
going to develop bricks for hands very shortly.
Listen, it could be, and we don't need that. I love Marlon to death, but.
Yeah, the Alabama boy poisoning your sweet, sweet Irishman.
Which we're not going to say anything about Alabama. We'll leave that to Patrick Queen. JK, stay away from Marlon. Stay off social media. Back on Instagram, coming in with a post the other day. Zero Dark 2023 has ended for him, and he's back in the mix. So that's very exciting as well.
It is. It definitely is. But like I said, you know, I think Davis, Beatty, probably McCrary, going to be the ones that are shouldering a lot of the workload to start camp. And I mean, Beatty's really just going to have every opportunity to be someone who gets a few touches or more than a few touches early on in his rookie season or absolutely waste away in camp. I think he's going to have some of the most possibility of anyone on this team to be maybe underheralded or unheralded and carve a nice role quickly. So camp is going to be huge for him, and they're going to be doing it in the jungle of Owings Mills in the middle of August. And that gets guys. Because I've been in Missouri. I've been at Mizzou in mid-July. It's hot. It's really hot. But it is not humid like that. And I think it is truly shocking. So we're going to see some bodies hit the floor, I believe.
Yeah, that was a good, funny little anecdote that Bill Curry gave me when we talked for the Colts podcast. And he was like, you know, I came from Georgia and I thought, oh man, I'm going to get up there into Maryland in the north and it's going to be just wonderful having that cool weather in the fall. And then I found out the humidity index was worse than it was in Georgia. And I was like, yep, like we've talked to players before that have come from all over the country. They always think it's going to be like, oh, it's the north, you know, whatever.
They don't know where Maryland really is either. Nope. They're not sure of what Maryland is a lot of times.
Yeah, McCary, same thing. He was like, yeah, I was coming from California. I literally didn't even know where Baltimore was. And then I found out it was in Satan's armpit. So.
Yeah, and the only place I've really been that I felt dumbfounded by the humidity beyond was like Disney and Universal Studios in August a couple years ago. That is the only place I've been that is more humid in my life.
And that is just a crush of human just kind of interaction and I think parenting.
That, and it's also landlocked as much as Baltimore is more so because there's no river around it. There's nothing like that.
Orlando is just a... Listen, I love the city beautiful, but that is just a concrete slab of just sweat and just, I don't even know what. I don't know what's going on down there, but
it is a jungle. But with that being said, let's go on to the jungle of tight ends and Patrick Ricard, the human pancake machine weapon, X, Y, Z, whatever you want to call him.
Brand ambassador for, what was that energy drink? I don't know.
Oh, it's not body armor. It's like some rain, maybe.
Rain. Yeah, that's what it was. Rain.
Yeah. Just he's a perfect monster, and the big shots are missing out because he is the poster boy of like a gigantic bully, also a video game nerd that likes to wear pit vipers and just has the look of like the shark from Shark Tales. And Nemo looks like Bruce actually from Finding Nemo.
It's so funny that you call him a video game nerd who also is like a huge bully and likes to just kill people on the field because you basically just described Tiger Woods, who is Monster's biggest like brand ambassador.
Exactly. So Rain did it right, and Monster and all of the other hardcore 7-Eleven energy drinks have been missing out on a great opportunity for him because he is that guy, pal. Especially with, you know, the meat dogs, Tyree Phillips and Ben Cleveland running behind him in that weird little video they did for whatever the event was, the schedule, or I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows at this point?
Who knows? But somebody, they're having a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun. Project Pat, he's there. He's not going anywhere. One of the underrated stories of the offseason is him basically talking to Justin Tucker. They go out, their wives are probably friends, whatever. Apparently they go out in Annapolis to have, you know, a nice lunch or whatever. And he's like, man, I really just, you know, wanted to see what else was out there. Probably wasn't as much as he thought. And he was like, man, I really want to come back. I don't know what to do. Feels like he walked away a little too far from DaCosta, who from everything we've ever heard, don't do that or you're not coming back. So Tucker was like, hey, just call Harbaugh. That's what I did. So for Pat was like, hey, coach, we just have me back now. And then he's like, okay, all right. And then DaCosta brings him in. And I like that story. I like that story.
Yeah, it's nice. I think it's, you know, people get a little too crazy about, you know, paying X, Y, and Z to X, Y, and Z position. I like to have a couple characters on my team. I like guys that, you know,
we make content and he's good content. So
yeah, he's great content. Good friend of the show going back many years.
From Spencer, Massachusetts, baby. But I mean, I think he's going to probably have a little bit reduced snaps and be more in a bully role and specialize in some things, have a couple more tricks up the sleeve. Be able to focus on special teams very much so. Devin Duvernay, I'm sure there's someone who'll listen and say, well, that's not worth X amount of dollars, whatever. But there was a big drop-off when he was hurt in kick return production because he is a battering ram beyond any other player in the NFL to put on special teams, do those kinds of things. So he's the one I guess we kick off with. But other than that, we can go into Nick Boyle. So many people, I think – Some of the, like, I think it was Jeff Zrebeck was talking, and I think he did a Ravens Twitter space a couple weeks ago maybe, and was saying, you know, I didn't know if he was going to play again, to be honest. And he looked so beat up and out of shape and messed up from that injury that I didn't know if he was going to play again. And Nicky Boyle, you know, the number one skinhead, I'm going to fucking work out until I die, badass, worked it out, lost some weight, says he feels lean, says he's almost back. He's not practicing with a brace, all of those things. So those two give you those possibilities to play the heavy ball and play the bully ball. And then conversely, obviously, the headliner, the star child, Mark Andrews, who Darren Waller is, you know, talking that talk, saying I'm number one, Mark Andrews number five. I think many people, I'm curious to see the NFL 100. That's my thing on Mark Andrews right now, because I think he's going like top 25.
Are they still doing that?
Yeah, August. Okay. August. All right. And you know I like the NFL 100.
I like it too. We talk about this every year. I think we both like it. Yeah.
We both don't take it as seriously as others.
That allows us to like it. I think people that are, and even at this point, I think people have kind of like tuned it out, but there was a period of like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like, God, it's just fucking watch the montages. It's fine. It's totally just an inoffensive, like midsummer NFL content, like kind of.
Yeah. If you're a real sicko, you're a real freak, you're addicted to watching this stupid sport and the stupid league that they have, then you're going to watch it and you're going to enjoy it. But curious to see where he lands, man, because I think when he did what he did, if you're a Cincinnati Bengal or a Green Bay Packer or probably a Brown, I think you're going to be like, man, that dude is top two worst case scenario tight end in the league, because what he did without Lamar, I think it was just such a interesting shot to see. We always thought maybe, all right, they just have a really special chemistry, which they definitely do. And we saw that in the second Browns game. Lamar throws four picks, makes a couple spectacular plays, throws it up for Mark, knows where he's going to be. They obviously do have a great rapport. But to know that it wasn't just that, to know that it is beyond that and that he really is that guy, pal, with Josh Johnson and with Tyler Huntley and doing things against the Rams, against the Packers, against the Bengals, against the whoever it was, against the Bears on third down, Tyler Huntley floats him a meatball that is such a horrible pass, and he, you know, goes and makes a crazy play. To know that it is beyond that, I think, was pretty eye-opening. And again, that's just why I'm curious. But my money right now, top two tight end in the league, I would, if you want to put Kelce ahead of him, I absolutely understand. Kittle, sure. Pitts might end up being a better player because he is that freaky, is that kind of athlete, sure. But right now, I think, you know, I'm going one. If you want to put Kelce one, that's fine. And I think that's that, considering the year that he just had. First team All-Pro says something. And I'm really excited. Just we're watching an all-time great Ravens player who probably is going to be a Raven for life and has consistently shown up in practice, been able to stay relatively healthy, do it with diabetes, all of those things. So he is one of, if not the most talented players on the team, one of, if not the most, I guess, underrated, I would say underrated superstars in the league. And if you want to talk some advanced stats, EPA per target, EPA total, points added, all of those metrics, top five out of every receiving player, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, receivers, running backs, tight ends. Last year, he had a historically great season for a tight end, top 10, 15, worst case in our lifetimes. You know, very, very prolific season considering and what he did against the Colts, all of those things. So he's that guy right now. He is one of the players, I would say, that maybe one of the only ones, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that's coming off of a great year, is signed long-term, especially, and has only gotten better. So he is kind of the most stable force on that entire offense, really. You know, Lamar has a tough contract situation. Lamar's still a great player, gives us everything out there, but don't sleep on Mark Andrews, man. Don't, truly don't. I'm sure many Ravens fans don't. I feel like I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but I just think he's that guy, pal.
He's inevitable is the way I was thinking about it the other day. You know, death taxes Mark Andrews. That's just what it feels like at this point. He's going to be at practice every day, to your point. He's going to play in pretty much every game, even though he has diabetes and, like, you know, he had this like label on him as being
he overheated last year at the Panthers joint practice is real bad. And yeah, that was a big scare for someone with diabetes.
Yeah, that was scary. But, you know, he comes back. And what do you know? He has the best season of his career, best season of any tight end last year. And yeah, he's just, I don't know what
best else. Ravens receiving season ever. Really?
Yeah. Easily, I think. I cannot say enough about the guy. I think he's on track to a Hall of Fame career. It's kind of tough for tight ends sometimes, but I could definitely see that happening. And it's just, it really is incredible to watch. What a nice guy. What a just beast of a player. And he feels inevitable to me, whether it's Lamar is sick or Lamar is not practicing because of whatever reason. He's always going to be out
there. That's the right things always too.
He does. He props his teammates up. He doesn't say a bad word about like Hollywood who leaves. He doesn't say a bad word about anyone. He just goes in and just puts his hat on and just fucking works, man. And he just like wants to be better. And you hear the things Harbaugh says about him. Harbaugh clearly fucking loves him in the way that I don't think he has loved a player in a long time. I just think he has a ton of respect for him as a former third round pick and a guy that's just earned it every single step of the way. And yeah, he's got immense, immense physical talents, but he doesn't just skate by on those. He does his homework in the classroom, and he keeps himself in tip top shape, not just out of wanting to be better than everyone, but because he has to. Probably like the diabetes, it probably like it makes him feel a little bit like not even a chip on his shoulder, but like I have to outwork people. I have to like keep myself in tip top shape. I have to stay on top of this shit, because if I don't, who knows what's going to happen. I mean, that's got to be like something within his psyche, I would think. That's got to affect him a little bit. And he's obviously turned it into something really positive. So, so much respect for
you. Yeah, it is like a permanent chip of like, yeah, I have diabetes and I'm going to be better than you.
Yeah. Like imagine having to deal with that, like as a pro athlete. And I mean, that's, and that's not even just like, oh, I was injured. Like that's not even like me with an ACL, for example. That's like something that is way more serious than that. And you've been dealing with for literally.
It's with you every day of your life, your entire life.
Yeah, exactly. And you're always, it's always going to be in the back of your mind. And, It colors everything you do, fitness wise, nutrition wise, everything. And it probably motivates him in a weird way. And good on him for turning that into something positive.
Definitely about to be 27 years old in September, and I think that's what's most interesting. It feels like in the new sport, in the new NFL, but today's NFL, the expansion of the tight end as a receiver, all of those things, the big slot role. Those players, the really good ones, the really, really good ones, the Greg Olsons, the Travis Kelce's, the Kittles, that is prime time, it feels like, is like 27 through like 31, 32. And he's getting into that. Like last year, I feel like it was a start of his prime. And I mean, Kelce, awesome year again last year, definitely. 32 years old, about to be 33 in October. So We're very fortunate. I think that he's one of the most fun players in Ravens history. And my second fun fact here was that I thought Kelce was either 31 or 32, and I just gave him a quick Google, and first top story, Barstool Sports, Travis Kelce is confirmed the horniest tight end in the NFL.
I think we already knew that. If you're doing like the earrings and like he's doing the fuckboy haircut and he's like shaving the beard up like on the sideburns, he's just doing a little too much. I think there's some sort of like horny swinger thing going on there. Not to call Travis out. I like Travis, but we gotta change the aesthetic up a little bit, I think.
Yeah, he had a dating show. And
I think Barstool did like a thing on him and like his ex-girlfriend and like how he always like made like her pay for dinners or something like that. Am I misremembering that?
He basically never paid for a single thing ever, and she like left him eventually because he was being so frugal. Like it wasn't like split it 50-50. It was like, you pay.
Dude, I fucking hate dealing with people like that. And I have people like that in my life who I love, but it's the most infuriating thing. It is so funny, like watching other people do that though. Like it feels like a Curb Your Enthusiasm, like just watching the ridiculousness of it. But yeah, it's infuriating to deal with.
Definitely. I mean, I love reality TV. I watch most stuff. Vanderpump Rules, The Bachelor. I'll watch the worst of the worst. Too Hot to Handle on Netflix. I'll watch all of that stuff. But that was truly cringe. And he, like, I remember Mark Schlereth's daughter was on it. Very beautiful girl. And he just, like, sandbagged the hell out of her. Just did not, I don't know. He's just beyond full of himself. And it is truly hilarious. So that's Travis Kelce. That's Talking Kelce. Catching Kelce was the name of the show.
You know,
Excuse me. You
kind of look like him a little bit.
He's got more like, he's like more Irish than me.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, it's not.
He's also like 6'5 and ripped.
Listen, you're not that far off. But yeah. Okay. That's
Catching Kelce.
That's Catching Kelce / Mark Andrews talk. So the two rookies, very excited about these two guys. And I'm very excited about the fact that our boy, Charlie Chuckles Kohler, out of Iowa State, is getting basically like no run at all. Like Isaiah Likely had a huge mini camp and everything like that, and people were really talking the guy up, including Lamar. So very happy about that. It feels like Isaiah Likely is going to be a big part of this team, but I was very excited about Kohler when I went back and watched his tape after they drafted him. Been very quiet. He's at this tight end university thing with Kelce and all the boys. Andrews couldn't go this year. So, you know, Kohler is there, and I like the fact that he's just sort of slipping under the radar right now. I feel like he's another guy who can make some, you know, little bit of noise this year.
Definitely is going to be just a really nice seam body, I think. Just so incredibly long, tall, and has the catch radius to be a factor in the red zone. I think both of these rookies definitely are going to be a factor in the red zone, but an interesting pairing. And that's just what stands out, is that he can get off the line. He is a thin guy. He does need to get, you know, add my classic buzzword, functional strength, but goes up and gets it. Lob him up the ball. He is a power forward. He's a center in the NFL. 6'7", his arm length, 34.5 inches. Like that would be fantastic for an offensive tackle. 96th percentile arm length, 10-inch paws. He ran a faster 40 than Mark Andrews did. Like, he had an all-time great workout. 36-inch vert, pretty nice three cone, broad jump, all of it. And, you know, he's the contested catch guy. He's that jump ball guy, the box out guy. Not really a factor after the catch. That's where I think, you know, likely is very, very, very different, especially. But Kohler is going to be that guy. You can go line up. He's going to have that nice, he's going to get real low in his stance in the slot and be able to go run up the seam and probably also just be a nice, reliable force to catch some 4-yard passes consistently, I think. Be just a ball magnet for Lamar in a time of need, playing all the zone defenses that they consistently do. So Kohler, definitely. I like what you're saying. Yeah, flying under the radar. I think it kind of coincides with like receiver hype, and people are going to want likely to play, you know, split out wide and get labeled as a receiver and all those things, which is fine. But I think that's why we're going to see Kohler definitely slip under the radar.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think he can do a little bit of that receiver thing where people have made some Mark Andrews comparisons. And with the way that we just talked about Andrews, that's obviously a little bit lofty. But if he can even do like what Andrews did as a rookie for like stretches of his rookie contract, like that's going to be huge, because he's not going to ever be the number one guy here. At least we don't think he's going to be with Mark in the picture for as long as he is. But that number two spot's probably going to be available after Nick Boyle's gone. So we'll see what happens, man. But he's got a big opportunity in front of him, as does Likely, who, like we've said, is just right on track. He's looking great in minicamp. 6'4", a little bit of a different player, maybe kind of some Delanie Walker vibes, I think people have said. So very, very exciting little tandem here.
It is. And the production Likely had was incredible. 2.42 yards per route run for his career. 2.99 in 2021. And the thing that I think is much different for Likely than anyone, and maybe he can do this somewhat better than Mark Andrews, especially at when Mark Andrews was a rookie, just being able to sink his hips really tight and cleanly in and out of breaks is what allows him to be more of a complete route runner and break in any direction, I think. Definitely a threat after the catch. Didn't test. I think he tested really poorly for what the expectations were and all that stuff. But again, you know, you can read as much into a 40 as you want, but explosive athlete, good size, good frame, nice blocker in space. He gets kind of, I guess, a bad rap because he wasn't asked to go block defensive linemen, out edges and DNs and stuff much, but a really consistent, I think, paced blocker in space on smaller defenders. So I think he's a little more advanced there. And can be a nice player on screens or outside runs or after the catch for another receiver. I think we see high effort there and a lot of fun blocks in his riddled throughout his tape. So, his frame, he's like a big linebacker, I think, like a really fast big linebacker is the way that he kind of reminds me of, and is going to be able to give the people who aren't Fred Warner and Eric Kendrick some trouble, safeties, linebackers. And now that you have Kohler, who's gigantic, and Andrews, who is a superstar, and Likely, who can be a matchup, or like there's different body types, different matchups. You're going to be able to single out different things with those guys in the pass game. And being able to utilize those three a few times with a Rashad Bateman or with a Devin Duvernay and a back is fun. Fun stuff. So I think the big thing for the tight ends is that it goes even further into, you know, the kind of craziness of Greg Roman and the conversations y'all have gotten into this offseason about how much is too much and how to simplify things. But the variations of 12 and 13 and 22 and things you can do, between Boyle and Ricard and Likely and Kohler and Andrews. Crazy, 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 crazy stuff. And I think the hidden thing is, you know, I'm going to knock on some wood here, is that if Andrews does go down, it feels like between Likely and Kohler, you're going to have some still viable middle of the field threats. So I like that insurance behind a player like him.
Yeah. And listen, Josh Oliver is still there too. So, I mean, that's a guy who we were excited about last year. So who knows?
He is. And never quite broke into the role that we thought he might be able to, maybe more a little bit more of a practice stud in that sense, but did some nice things and I think became a better blocker last year. So they couldn't possibly, people like Tony Pollyon too, as well. So they just are absolutely stacked. And maybe we see one of them moved. Who knows? Maybe somebody gets moved.
Could be. I mean, listen, you got surplus at a lot of these different positions, and you have a glaring need at one. So maybe you will make that move for the wide receiver too. But you know, in the meantime, who knows what's going to happen? Anything else on tight ends and running backs?
That's kind of no. I mean, it's really them, and then Bateman, and you know, then the second crew of receivers they have right now. But the backs and the tight ends are the players they're relying on in this offense to go make plays with the football. So the two that we covered today are kind of the success of this team in many ways. The offensive line, obviously the most, maybe, you know, important outside of a Mark Andrews, but they are more important than a Mark Andrews even, because you can only go as far as Lamar Jackson takes you. And Lamar Jackson, I think, has proved that it's not within him to just be able to survive a complete dog crap offensive line situation or a poor or mediocre offensive line situation. But those are the guys, the backs and the tight ends on this team, that if the Ravens score, you know, 49 offensive touchdowns, 55 offensive touchdowns this year, the backs and tight ends are probably going to score 35 of them. Yeah. So it's what they're relying on. So these are the groups, the ones we talked about. And at the end of the day, you're really hoping that you drafted a J.K. Dobbins, that he can come back, that Mark Andrews is going to just continue to get better and better. You've have some nice other pieces around those guys and some good insurance policies for them. So that's kind of the lifeblood of who, aside from Lamar Jackson, or who Lamar Jackson is distributing the ball to and making plays for you within this scheme. And I think it all ties into what we talked about in the beginning, that if, you know, things don't work out, it's because that was your roster construction, that was your idea, and this is year kind of four of it. They did try to do the Hollywood and Bateman and, you know, having those guys, and didn't quite work out health-wise last year, but it's what they've subscribed to. So better get it done.
Yeah, I guess sink or swim a little bit for some of this philosophy. So excited to see that. Thank you for your contributions tonight to the show, Bud. Went almost an hour. I don't know if I was expecting that, but turned out to be a beefy episode, big veiny triumphant bastard, and that's great because we will be talking to you guys after the holiday. Enjoy your Independence Day, the 4th of July. I will be down the ocean. I'm sure Spen has some big plans as well. So it's going to be a good one. Everyone enjoy your holidays. Stay safe. Thanks for listening. Follow.
If you happen to end up doing the 9 beer, 9 hot dog, 9 inning challenge, please tag us in the videos or send it to us. Shave mustaches. I will be participating in Top Gun Summer starting on Independence Day as well. So if you do the challenge has been going around, I would like to see, and I might be partaking myself in some good old indigestion. 9 beers, 9 hot dogs in 9 innings. Love to see it.
If I wasn't currently battling heartburn right now, that would sound like the best thing in the world. So yeah, maybe we'll try to get after that a little bit down in Ocean City.
If you're listening to this and you're 20 to 24 and you don't do that, I don't think you should listen to this podcast anymore. And if you do it, I want to see the video. So tag me in the video. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, tag us in it. We'll retweet it. We'll maybe effort it on our own end as well. We got to practice.
I'm probably going to get in there. I'm probably going to shape my entire Independence Day around trying to do that challenge.
We have to practice what we preach around here. We're a very transparent podcast. So, yes, thank you for listening. Follow us on social media. You can follow the show at Podcast Beatdown. You can follow me at Jake Luke. That's Louque. This is all on Twitter, by the way. And you can follow Benjamin Franklin here at Ravens for Dummies. That's the number 4 in the middle. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your holidays, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
See ya.
Arrivederci.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Get down. Baltimore!
where they get it. Everything out of me. They gonna get a Super Bowl out of me. I need that. I need that.